5G, many of you are likely to know what it is and what it can do. But the question we're going to ask this morning is how it can change the trajectory of the online entertainment sector. That was the question interrogated at a panel by Vodafone in the US this week, where our next guest, digicultural trend analyst Lauren DeLisa Coleman, was a panelist. Good morning to you, Lauren. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How's it going? What right. morning for you guys? Still evening. The day before for us.
Yes, but the day after Thanksgiving for you guys as well, right?
Yes, where everybody has a turkey hangover and is crazed trying to get every deal that he or she can during Black Friday sales.
We have that here.
Well, you know, I just came back from Rome a couple of days ago and I, you know, saw Black Friday like all over the place. And I was like, our whole like retail pandemonium has now officially entered Europe, where it's like, because you have to have Thanksgiving in order to have a Black Friday,
we
right?
Don't.
So if
we
you
don't
have a Thanksgiving, it has to be called something else. But yes, it is. There's all this Italian, and then you see in English Black Friday.
Yes, yes, we have the Boxing Day sales, which have been usurped somewhat by Black Friday, and the fact that we are basically living this Black Friday because of Thanksgiving, which we don't celebrate. It's all rather bizarre. But there we go. It is people bargain hunting before Christmas.
Yes, bargain hunting, a fun thing.
Yeah.
No doubt. No matter what you call it.
Talk to me about 5G then. So just remind us, recap. With where we are with 5G, what is it and what can it do? What does it mean that we'll be capable of doing?
Okay. Well, first of all, you know, just to confirm for any, you know, fabulous engineers or whatever listening, I'm not an engineer. So, you know, I'm looking at it always, of course, from a more a cultural and behavioral perspective. And so I can, I guess, best give a definition in that manner as well. So 5G at its really most simple form or understanding is that it will supercharge your phone so that everything can run much, much faster. This is important because the phone will be able to give you experiences that have been kind of forecast. So when we talk about three-dimensional images on your phone and things like that, you need a lot of power to be able to do that. And so 5G, with its upcoming capability, it would enable those to be able to do that at a really, you know, like I said, a very simple explanation and how it would best apply to entertainment.
So
but it has all kinds of other wonderful and, you know, very deeply meaningful, not that entertainment isn't, but, you know, deeply meaningful applications that will help with, you know, medicine and being able to diagnose ailments and things like that much more. But for our purposes tonight, Kate, yes, it's just going to make your phone supercharged.
Super duper,
you know,
fast, yes.
Yes.
A souped up version of 4G.
Souped up version, yes.
So you were on this panel about the future of entertainment. How did 5G come into that? What sort of things did you establish?
Well, essentially, it was produced by, I guess Vodafone's U.S., sister company, Verizon's 5G labs, right? So they have a lab that just focuses on 5G as it pertains to entertainment, that intersection, and being able to just further partnerships and development so much more. They're very, very innovative and very creative, and I was very happy to be a part of it. So that was the actual meat, if you will, of the panel discussion. So we were really talking a lot about just what we see coming up next, different challenges, innovation and more, and, you know, just looking at this really exciting space. I think it is particularly important to look at this now because, of course, due to the pandemic, we all know that almost everything that was happening before is accelerated, but particularly in this area because, you know, as we tried to entertain ourselves when we were in, I don't know, lockdown 1, 2, and I don't know if 3 is coming up, whatever, you know, you lose count. A lot of it was, you know, virtual. And so now as we kind of tiptoe back out, which I don't know if we'll be going back in after the, you know, new variant
Omicron,
announced
yes.
today.
Yes.
But, and that just sounds like almost a villain of a superhero, like kind of.
I actually said this earlier.
Movie,
it sounds
it?
Like a sci-fi movie,
it's
Omicron.
Very, yeah, from like Transformers or whatever, but that's a whole other story. but yeah, so that has I think, moved us into a new way of interacting with each other and being entertained and what entertainment stands for. So as we look at things going forward, it seems that hybrid, you know, kind of events and more will be that of the norm, right? So that we were glued to our phones and other, whatever, to other types of screens that you had before because you were not able to go out. And now it just seems to be really of the moment to have events which will have a virtual component and that which is physical. And I think that this is going right. to be just something really exciting to see how it develops. And 5G will be incredibly important for that, as it will make that virtual experience, whatever yeah. it is, richer, more immersive, et cetera, et cetera. For those who might not feel like coming out or still might be, we might have like capacity issues for a long time to come. Who knows? But this is really, you know, really quite key, this idea of hybrid events and then events which don't, you know, exist in the physical world at all. This kind of notion around, well, I guess we would call them maybe digital twins or deep fakes, what have you. You know, this is just something which will be terribly exciting. There were a couple of other people on the panel as well talking about, you know, some of the technology that they had yeah. used for recording artists, is, you know, who had really, I mean, the concert was very, it was the most lifelike, I guess, imaging or rendering of like said fans, recording artists than before. Yeah.
And fans were immersed in that experience virtually.
Absolutely. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What was another, if you're to sum up some of the jaw-dropping moments from that panel, the bit where you phone your mum or your friends afterwards and say, oh my God, I heard this today and it's so exciting, or it completely blew me away. What
really
would be one of those things?
I really do think the concept of three-dimensional images, you know, coming across your phone, somehow deepening the experience that's virtual is, you know, going to be just, I think, very much revolutionary. I kind of took the position, though, that as we were talking about that and the excitement around it, is that at the same time, we need to be very, very much aware of the fact that, well, I'm sure you guys were talking about Astro World there, just like we were here and in many parts of the world, you yeah. know, Travis Scott, et cetera. And so imagine just if that had been a hybrid event. And so now you're managing something which is a mass casualty event that's both virtual and physical. And so what's the protocol around that? As we know, when you experience something virtual, whether this might be a headset or whatever, it's deeper, hence the word immersive. And so the psychological response to it from your brain is much deeper.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we
really
need to think about duty
of that,
care, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. At the same time that we think about all of this innovation, just because you can do it doesn't maybe mean that you should, or what are like the best elements for that, so that really that end user experience is both safe and honestly not like that overwhelming. Like, honestly, I don't want to do something which has like 8 million things I have to do while I'm allegedly being entertained, which should be pretty passive. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Unless it's depending on what it is. I think that too is something that is that which has to be kind of discussed,
yeah.
because there's just so many things that you can do and it's wonderful, but it's just like you have to chill with some of that stuff, you know?
You don't want to work hard for your immersive experience, basically, do you?
Absolutely.
You've also been writing about social media startups and mere exposure theory, which I'm still slightly coming to terms with. Tell us what the theory is. What is mere exposure theory?
Well, I think
theory?
It probably sounds a bit more lofty than it really is. When I explain to you what it is, you'll say, yeah, well, that makes sense, and I know that. And just to be very clear, I did not create this term, nor the research, but it is something which I have researched and apply it to that which, you know, I've just been tracking in this space of younger startup founders who are of color, and how this idea of mere exposure theory can or cannot correlate to how much or how little they are getting funding. This is something that's not really talked about nearly enough. But essentially, first of all, mere exposure theory is something that we all know and deal with every day. The fact that you're exposed to something more often gives you a sense of familiarity with it, which ideally then makes you feel that you can trust it more, that you like it more, and you don't even know this is happening consciously. It's just subconscious, right? There's been many studies around this before. It applies, I think, most, I guess, top of mind to like advertising. You have to see yeah. something a minimum of 8 times before you actually go and like investigate it a little bit more if you haven't heard of it before. with a human being, this is very important, because the less you see something, if I am of color and a woman, and the less you see of me in a certain environment, the less familiar you are, obviously, and then the least amount of trust is kind of thrown my way. Follow me? So if you don't trust me, then there's a lot of things that can happen around that, none of them which are good in terms of business and forwarding things. So, you know, it's just very important to consider how we are or are not including various people in various roles within all forms of media, because it really does make a huge difference, Kate. As you know, we have like kind of the trickle down effect.
Mm. And also, presumably, mere exposure theory could be used for positive change. Could it
absolutely
not to indoctrinate us, but actually we can reverse this, you know, rather than missing all those important people, minorities that we perhaps are not being shown enough because of the habits built up, the data built up because of mere exposure theory. Can we turn it on its head and actually make it useful?
Absolutely. I mean, I think this, it's just a matter of being aware that these things are happening. And so then one can take the step to be able to say, oh, well, I want to be able to do this or support, or it's important to include all types of people, mindsets, et cetera, so that it really does give all of us who are listening, and that's what we're doing all day, every day, listening and watching, a greater breadth of information and experience. And it's just important all the way around.
Yeah, really interesting. It's been lovely to speak to you. Thank you for joining us the day after Thanksgiving, when you probably
My pleasure,
need to
Kate.
Be checking in with a sofa and a film very, very soon, I'm sure, on this
I
on
think
this
that's
Friday
a good
evening.
Idea.
Lauren DeLisa Coleman, Digicultural Trend Analyst. Thanks for joining us. Great to speak to you again, Lauren. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.